right, good morning. We have a quorum. If the council would grab their seat. I will call the Dallas City Council agenda meeting to order for May 23rd, 2018. We have invocation this morning led by Reverend Rachel Bowman in Mr. Madrono's district, the Oaklawn United Methodist Church. Reverend Bowman served for 10 years at University Park United Methodist prior to joining the Oaklawn Church. She's passionate about discipleship, social justice, and hospitality for those on the margins. A graduate of Texas Wesleyan University and Drew Theological Seminary, she edited the CEB Women's Study Bible and has contributed a long list of curricula for Spark House Press. Reverend Bowman is also a certified Berkman coach who loves strengthening church staffs and lay leadership to improve their mutual understanding and ability to work well with each other. Her husband is also a reverend and is also a United Methodist minister, Mike, and they live in the Dallas area with Griffin, Becca, Sylvia, and Thomas. It's great to have you here. And then we'll follow that with a Pledge of Allegiance by Councilman McGew. All rise.
Thank you, Mayor. Let us pray. New every morning is your love, great God of light, and all day long you are working for good in the world. Stir up in us this day a desire to serve you and to live peacefully with our neighbors, and to devote each day to building up your love in the world. God of this new day, you call us to be your people and to work for those around us. We ask that you be with these elected officials today as they come seeking your guidance and support. We need your love, your transforming love in our lives. Turn our hearts to you, O God. May we focus on what acts of compassion and justice you call us to. Thank you for breathing in us, working in us to enact change in the world. Let us pray today, O God, for the persecuted, for their oppressors, for nations that foster persecution, and for those who ignore it. Let us read stories and listen to witnesses of hope borne by those who have lived through and are living in the midst of struggle. And let us hear the promises of the gospel for all who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. As we pray, let us not narrow our compassion for all who suffer. Whatever their profession or creed, let no hatred or prejudice enter our hearts for anyone. Called by the Holy Spirit to unity with the persecuted, let us enter into their suffering, repenting of our ignorance, refusing to be silent. We give you thanks, O God, for this community of leaders, for they represent your people. May they stand on the ground of their collective faith and hope, which we find in you, O God. May God bless you with discomfort at easy answers, half-truths, superficial relationships, so that you will dig deep into the faith of your heart. May God bless you with anger at injustice, oppression, and exploitation of people, so that you will work for justice, equity, and peace. May God bless you with tears to shed for those who suffer from pain, rejection, starvation, and war, so that you will reach out your hand to comfort those and change that pain into joy. And may God bless you with foolishness to think that you can make a difference in the world, so that you will do the things that others tell you you cannot. O God, we call upon you in this time and in this place. Amen.
Thank you, Reverend Bowman. Thank you, Councilman McGew. I wanted to brag on him. He had his State of District 10 last night and did a great job. I've been to a lot of town hall meetings, but hadn't been to something like that. So, good job. Miss Grayson brings us some guests this morning.
Well, I don't see them. Are they here?
Where are they?
There they are. There they are. They're coming, everyone. What we've got is a bundle of cute kittens this morning. Oh, my goodness. I hope you all, the camera gets a shot of these kittens. It's kitten season, and Dallas Animal Services is in need of kitten fosters. Every year, DAS takes in approximately 4,500 kittens. These baby kittens require care that, sadly, DAS hasn't historically been able to offer. However, this year, DAS is taking strong measures to save the lives of these newborn kittens. They've bought numerous incubators, rescheduled staff to provide around-the-clock 24-hour bottle feeding and care coverage, and are aggressively recruiting Dallas citizens to help by becoming kitten fosters. We hope that means you. Already this spring, DAS has improved our kitten survival rate by 50% over last year. But the season is still rolling, and we need more citizens to pitch in and help us make this the most successful kitten season in the history of DAS. Fosters improve a kitten's chances of survival by providing them one-on-one care, reducing their susceptibility to disease contracted from being in the shelter environment, and providing them the attention that makes them thrive. Busy? We understand you're busy. You choose how long you'd like to commit. Even one kitten for 1 week will save a life this spring. To enroll as a kitten foster, email dasfoster@dallascityhall.com. You'll be given supplies and the information to make a difference. Thank you in advance for helping us out.
Thank you, Miss Grayson.
Let's see this. Look. Oh, he's got his tie. I thought maybe I could get his face. Well, this little cutie pie has just wrecked our director's tie. You all get a look at that face. Okay, we need your help to foster these little kittens. And you just wrecked his tie. Oh, my gosh. How cute.
Thank you very much. And thank you, everybody at Dallas Animal Services, for the job that you do. A matter of personal privilege, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mayor. I just wanted to throw a shout-out and brag to my nephew. He is going to become valedictorian today. He is at Forney High School. He's going to deliver a smashing speech this afternoon. I'm going to have to leave a little early for that. But I really want to quickly just give you some superlatives. He's never made a B in school from kindergarten to senior year. He also has made the highest grade point in the average in the history of Forney Independent School District, 5.563. He is already enrolled at UT Austin in nutrition studies in the pre-med program. So just really looking forward to his academic career, and we're just real proud of him, and we love him very much.
Great story. We're all proud of our nephews and nieces when they do good. Thank you. Ms. Johnson.
Thank you. Good morning. Your first five registered speakers this morning will be Richard Sheridan, William Hopkins, Eric Williams, Ashley Heidenbrecht, and Rhonda Chu. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are given 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the podium. When your time is up, please stop. Also, if you have any comments, address those to Mayor Rawlins only. If you have any handouts, go ahead and hand it to the officer to my left, your right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker, Richard Sheridan.
Yes, good morning, Mayor and City Council. Richard Sheridan, 3817 Vinette Lane, Dallas, Texas. Appreciate being here. My topic is very controversial, very sensitive, and I'll do the best I can to cover it. Here to speak about Allen Brooks, the city's plan for Allen Brooks and the Confederate War Memorial. It's stated in the Bible My people suffer for lack of knowledge. It is a lack of knowledge or an evil agenda that has many citizens of Dallas suffering over the Allen Brooks and the Confederate War Memorial issues, with significant increase in racial tensions they are causing. I watched both public hearings, and they were not a pretty sight. It was John Fullenweiler who got physically removed from here, and at least one city council member, I believe, has been threatened because of this whole Confederacy mess. I believe, again, it's the false flag. This whole thing is based on the local and national call for the removal of Confederate soldiers, statues, and street names based on a false flag, a made-up event in Charlottesville, North Carolina, and is part of Satan. Yes, I'll bring up Satan in the Bible to divide us. With this said, Dallas is planning to build a memorial statue to Allen Brooks, who was lynched in Dallas in 1910, and to desecrate the gravesite of Confederate soldiers by demolishing or removing the Confederate War Memorial in Pioneer Park. And here's some very important information about our city council and all of us to consider. Brooks' mob lynching was a very rare public act. I think there was only one lynching in Dallas. Certainly there were hangings, but there is the Martyrs Park, which needs to be honored. Those three men need to be honored. Allen Brooks was known to be an alcoholic. And I won't go over the details here. Certainly the information that's been researched, published in the hangings and lynching in Dallas County, presents a situation. My position is this. Is there a better man that this city can honor than Allen Brooks? I think there's a better man, because the information is out there, and if this happens, again, racial tensions, I believe, will significantly increase. So let's get down to, and again, the postcards here, copy from the Dallas Morning News. Let's get down to the Confederate War Memorial. The memorial has been in Pioneer Park for over 120 years, and it pays tribute to soldiers and generals from Texas that fought in the Civil War. Under it are the bones of at least 15 Confederate soldiers and generals, and Dallas is planning to either demolish this monument or have it removed because they believe it symbolizes white supremacy, which is the furthest thing from the truth. Most Confederate soldiers in their hearts were fighting for a just cause, and the cause was not slavery, but the tyranny of the North that was placing very heavy taxes on the South. So there's a law by U.S. Congress passed in 1958, and on the back you can see what it says. So again, we have a decision time. Our mayor and city council now have a major decision to make, which is to build a memorial statue to Allen Brooks and to desecrate the Confederate War Memorial, which significantly increased racial tensions, I believe so, or to leave things as they are, or to have a memorial that's more appropriate than Allen Brooks. So thank you very much for your attention. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
William Hopkins.
My name is William Hopkins. Richard kind of threw me off. I'm here to speak on something, but Richard kind of threw me off, so I want to say something. Back when they was the Confederates, they was hanging blacks, so it wasn't no blacks to say nothing about the Confederates or the Nazis salute them right now. The Confederates were started by six or maybe nine Ku Klux Klan members, so that's a Ku Klux Klan flag. It's not Richards, it's not the Confederates, it's the Ku Klux Klan. They the ones started it. So, you got a good on their bandwagon. So don't try to start nothing on your own and try to tell us it wasn't about slavery and it wasn't about this. The Confederates were started by the Ku Klux Klan. Jesus was black. So what would Jesus say about the Confederates and the Nazis and by him being black, I wonder what would Jesus say about the Confederates. So let me get on to what I'm talking about. They handed out y'all the lawsuit, Mayor Rollins, where the city of Dallas sued the RS Arlead plant. Now y'all finna do some gentrification, and you finna move all of the poor people to West Dallas. West Dallas already got money, Mayor Rollins, due to this lawsuit. You sued. You lied. The first sheet of what the city said, they didn't have nothing to do with the lawsuit in West Dallas. You lied. The second sheet is what the city sued. They got insurance. They got everything for the people in West Dallas. But now y'all want to put all the poor people in West Dallas and keep the money, let the blacks die, and keep the money. Fred Byron and Bud, Dorothy Bud, Lisa Blue, and Russell Bud are the Fred Byron and Bud law firm. They either paying y'all or paying these people, giving them a contribution to their campaign, Fred Byron and Russell Bud and them. Y'all got this land bank. Russell Budd and Fred Byron, they all tied into it. They give y'all money and y'all flipping it back and they funnel it through Merrill Lynch. I told the FBI, James Adams and Michael Lewis down at the West End. The FBI know. That's why I got on here. Fake news and the FBI. The news know. The news know that lawsuit that was in the boys club that John them had, there wasn't no lawsuit, but the media won't tell it because it's blacks. Y'all want to steal the money. I think Russell Budd and them is paying the media. They paying the Dallas Morning News. I told the Dallas Morning News. They wrote a story, Dallas Morning News, 2012, December 16th, 17th, and 18th of 2012. They did a story, Dallas Morning News. I gave the Dallas Morning News the lawsuit. But they wouldn't write about the lawsuit, but they wrote about West Dallas, but they wouldn't tell that the city sued. Russell Budd and them paying the media, they paying y'all to let the blacks die, and then y'all finna come in with this low income for West Dallas. West Dallas don't need no low income. They need the city to come with their lawsuit that y'all lying about and get them people their money in West Dallas instead of this gentrification. We don't need poor people in West Dallas. We already got money. We got millions of dollars that the city stole. Dwayne Carraway, Barbara Mallory, Dwayne, Scott Greaves told me he the federal government. He talking to the federal government. He lying. Thank you. I'll be back next month, man.
Eric Williams, not present. Ashley Heidenbrecht.
Good morning. I'm here today to talk about access to public transportation. A lot of you, or I'm assuming all of you, have by now seen the economic opportunity assessment put out by the Community Foundation of Texas. I attended several of those meetings, and I know Mayor Rawlings was there as well. And one thing that he said that stood out to me when he spoke was that we need to be looking for solutions which address these issues long term, not just next month, 2 years, 3 years, but 10, 20, 30 years from now. How can we improve the situation? And a good way to accomplish that is to start with issues that impact our youth. So I've given you all a report. I'm sorry I didn't bring enough copies for everyone. That's my fault. But there's a lot of statistics in this report that I've included. But the main thing I want to focus on is a potential intervention. And what we see a lot is in Central Dallas, that has the highest concentration of poverty in this city, and it also has the highest usage of DART services in this community. So what I'm looking at is what ways can we alleviate the economic burden on homeless and low-income families and also on the Dallas School District, because with McKinney-Vento, it requires that all homeless students have access to transportation to get them to their school of origin. And that does require DART usage, which the school district has to pay for. So what I'm proposing is that y'all consider the possibility of giving free access to DART transportation for all students. And what we notice is that 51.7% of DART riders are low income. And of that, only 3.2% of DART riders are under the age of 18. So that tells me that group, most likely many of them will be enrolled in school in K through 12. So that's a pretty small portion of DART riders. And what we notice too is that passenger revenues only account for 8% of DART revenues. So when you look at ridership of students, that's going to be a very, very small number of revenue that's generated for DART through their DART fares. But what constitutes the majority of DART fare is the sales and use tax, which is just the penny tax that's used to pay for about 72% or is responsible for about 72% of DART revenue. So if we allow students to have free access, the impact is going to be very, very minimal on DART revenue. And a way that we could possibly supplement that would be to increase the penny tax in some areas of spending. And I know I'm almost out of time, but I did conduct a Facebook poll to address community buy-in, and 97% of people polled said they would be on board with increasing the tax. Thank you.
Mayor. Thank you. Ms. Grayson.
Ms. Heidenbrecht, over here. Just wanted to say that this council's been working very hard to try and get DART to improve their bus service, and I hope you go speak to them. They meet every other Tuesday. Thank you.
Rhonda Chu.
Good morning. My name is Rhonda Chu. I live at 7211 Great Trinity Forest Way in Ridge at Trinity Apartments. I come here today to speak on behalf of the elementary children that go to school at Frederick Douglass at Comstock right there on Jim Miller and Elam about the problem we are having at Great Trinity Forest Way with the traffic of the area of where the children have to walk to school. If someone could look at these pictures on my camera, well, I brought pictures down here to show you how our children is walking down Great Trinity Forest Way in Jim Miller to get to their schools with no protection of them in the street of harm's way. We need some bicycle trails through these vacant lots that's on these properties. That's nothing there. Grass grows up sometimes to your waist, but I'm not here concerning that. It's the problem of getting these children out of the streets on some kind of safer pathway. The apartments where I live, they have actually put holes, walls in their fences to get the children to come across this field to get to their schools to keep them from being in on Great Trinity Forest Way in the streets. So we are trying to get them to make some bicycle trails to get these children off of Great Trinity Forest Way, out of harm's way, off the streets, so they can go to school and we won't have to worry about our children being ran down like I have been on public streets, on the sidewalk, and they have ran over me, fractured my jaw when I lived on Alaska. Mr. Caraway, I lived in your district for 17 years. I watched how you cleaned up the pit bull problem, and I'm hoping that Mr. Atkins, I live in your district now. I've been in your district for 2 years, and this is the district that I'm speaking of.
Ma'am, if you can speak to me, just speak
to me.
Oh,
I'm so sorry.
That's all right. No problem.
I'm so sorry,
that's all
but
right.
I know him.
I'll tell him.
Okay, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
But, sir, this is all I'm here for, to try to get some safe bicycle trails or some wheelchair trails through these patches so we can get our children down Great Trinity Forest Way without cars running into them. And I have pictures to show you exactly what I'm talking about.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins would like to speak.
I would like to say that we are looking into the trails that are going down the Great Trinity Forest. But also, Mary, do we have someone from Parks Department that can get with her to talk about all the trails, the future, what we're trying to do, because it's a safety issue there.
For the children.
Yeah, for the children, yes, ma'am. But we are going to have a meeting about it. That did come up last week. We know we got an AT&T trail there with the
yes,
hike and
sir.
Bike trail. But we also got to look at Trinity Forest going down the street. We also have a street light on Redar crossing Trinity Forest.
Street light, sir? Yes. It says 20 miles an hour.
That's fine.
They still
right.
come through right. there doing 20
I know.
Miles
that's,
okay.
That's fine.
So
yes, sir, they do.
Someone from Parks Department or Mr. Atkins' office will get with you. Thank you for coming down.
Yes, sir.
You look marvelous, by the way.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Y'all have a blessed day.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Cadway.
We will now move to your voting agenda. Item 1, approval of minutes of the May 9th, 2018 City Council meeting.
Do we have any discussion, edits? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried.
We'll now move to your consent agenda. Your consent agenda consisted of agenda items 2 through 34. There were no addendum consent agenda items. Agenda item 10 is being pulled by Councilmember Griggs. Therefore, your consent agenda consists of agenda items 2 through 9 and 11 through 34.
We got a motion and a second discussion. Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to point out to my colleagues that agenda item 19, which is receipt of funds from Red Development Company, that is Dallas Police and Fire pension owned building. They have not shaken off all their crazy investments in real estate. They're not reallocating their portfolio like they're supposed to be doing. And here's just another example of where they've got very sticky fingers with regards to these heavily real estate investments. Now, this item, it's good. I mean, they're paying us to fix some streetlights, and that's fine. But I just don't know that that board is really doing the asset allocations that they need to do over there. And they testified in front of the pension committee, I think it was last week, that the reason they have not disposed of all the real estate that they're sitting on is because they're worried about a fire sale, which makes no sense in a market that is so hot and driving so hard right now, that they cannot reallocate their portfolio into a portfolio that is normalized with other pension systems. So just because it's on the agenda, I brought it up. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins, you've got your light on. Thank you. Thank you. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 10, authorize the one deposit of the amount awarded by the special commissioners in the condemnation proceeding South, City of Dallas v. Pamela Samantha Keats et al., to acquire approximately 902,535 square feet of land for right-of-way located in Kaufman County for the Lake Tawakoni 144-inch pipeline project, and two, settlement of the condemnation proceeding for an amount not to exceed the award, not to exceed $208,700. This item was pulled by Councilmember Griggs.
Thank you. I think it came through Mr. Kleinman's committee, so I'll ask for a motion from
motion for approval.
You want to discuss? Okay. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? And Mr. Griggs opposed. Okay.
We will now move to your items for individual consideration. Agenda item 35, consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning we have full council and individual appointments. Nominees for full council appointment to the Cypress Waters Municipal Management District, Chris Housewright is being nominated by Councilmember Narvaez for the 15-19 term. Mr. Housewright meets the agent or employee with direct or indirect interest in property resident special qualification. To the Reinvestment Zone 17 Board, TOD, Andrew Brookshire is being nominated by Councilmember Kingston. To the Reinvestment Zone 19 Board, Cypress Waters, Claire Oliver is being nominated by Councilmember Narvaez. Nominees for individual appointments to the Cultural Affairs Commission, Lori Stahl is being nominated by Councilmember Kleinman. Ms. Stahl meets the Literary Arts special qualification. To the Dallas Citizens Police Review Board, Joshua M. Vernon is being nominated by Councilmember Grayson. To the Senior Affairs Commission, Debbie Diane Austin is being nominated by Councilmember Atkins. Ms. Austin meets the 55 plus years of age special qualifications.
We get a motion to approve, Ms. Grayson, and second. Any discussion?
Yes.
Mr. Caraway.
I just wanted to make a general statement as related to us appointing people to boards and commissions. Folks have the right to exercise their ability to run. When we put them on boards and commissions, we hope to put them on there to serve and serve that particular board and commission and not to use it as a springboard, not that these people are doing that. That's just general as we move forward as a council.
Thank you. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Before I leave this item, I am required in accordance with Dallas City Code Chapter 12A, Section 12A-19G2, I'm required to notify you of individuals who failed to timely submit their financial disclosure reports. I'll read the names as follows. And again, these are board members who have not filed their financial disclosure report. They are Ricardo Martinez. Ms. Martinez serves on the Board of Adjustment, alternate members. Michael A. Mendoza. Mr. Mendoza serves on the RZ3 Oak Cliff Gateway TIF. Armand Rupani serves on the RZ7 Sports Arena TIF. Larry Bennett serves on the RZ8 Design District TIF. Thomas F. Goodell serves on the RZ14 Skillman Corridor TIF. Andrew Howard serves on the RZ16 Davis Garden TIF. Jonathan R. Braddock serves on the RZ16 Davis Garden TIF. William S. Harris serves on the RZ17 TOD TIF. Joselito V. Giron serves, he's an associate municipal judge. And Thaddeus Iwuji is an associate municipal judge. Thank you. We'll move to agenda item 36. Item 36, consideration of appointment to the Dallas Area Rapid Transit Board of Directors for position 1 and position 2.
Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to appoint the following two individuals to the Dallas Area Rapid Transit Board of Directors for the term to begin July 1st, 2018 and expire June 30th, 2020. Sue S. Bowman and Dominic P. Torres.
Second. Motion is second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed? The motion is carried.
On agenda item 37, Councilmember Felder has a conflict of interest and will be leaving the council chamber. Item 37 is a resolution designating absences by Councilmember Kevin D. Felder as being for official city business.
Entertain a motion. We've got a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Councilmember Felder, you may return to the council chamber. Agenda item 38, Mr. Mayor, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano would like to be recognized on this item.
Mr. Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to defer this for 2 weeks till June 13th.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion, Mr. Medrano. Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Mr. Medrano, for deferring this. This item is problematic for me because it is applying a historic tax credit to a brand new building and property that is not historic. And the main reason that the developer is doing this is to avoid our new affordable housing policy, because apparently there's a loophole in our historic tax credit policy. While we thought we had passed resolutions that said if you get any help from the city, you need to add affordability, but apparently through our historic tax credit. So I'm hoping that we'll have the time to kind of get that sorted out on this particular project. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Felder.
Yes, I have additional concerns myself. I did ask the developer to provide me his MWBE information, and the insulting thing that he did was to wait until we were in the middle of our briefing to get me the information. So I hope that he hears what I'm saying and gets me that information and tries harder to get someone of diverse background to be contractors on this project. Thank you.
Thank you. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 39 will be held till later in the meeting. We'll move to agenda item 40. Item 40, authorized 1, preliminary adoption of the FY 2018-19 HUD Consolidated Plan Budget for U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development grant funds in an estimated amount of $31,021,054 for the following programs in estimated amounts. A, Community Development Block Grant in the amount of $14,810,163. B, Home Investment Partnerships Program in the amount of $5,886,901. C, Emergency Solutions Grant in the amount of $1,203,874. D, Housing Opportunities for Persons with AIDS in the amount of $6,645,116. And E, Estimated Program Income in the amount of $2,475,000. 2, Preliminary Adoption of the FY 2017-18 Reprogramming Budget in the amount of $3,323,870. 3, an amendment to the 5-year consolidated plan to extend the covered period by 1 year from September 30th, 2018 to September 30th, 2019, and 4, a public hearing to be held on June 13th, 2018 to receive comments on the proposed use of funds.
Thank you. I entertain a motion, Mr. Atkins.
Motion is moved.
The motion is second. Any discussion? Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mayor, and I guess I've got kind of a twitchy finger this morning. I apologize. But I did want to say, as many of you know, I have been very critical of these entitlement programs and how they've been delivered through the City of Dallas. And so I think it's appropriate at this time to also praise both staff as well as the CDC committee for really working towards kind of cleaning this up, providing more transparency, focusing on the programs that are successful. We're 6 years into a five-year plan. We have a new five-year plan coming, and I think that'll be very telling moving forward about how we can use these programs to deliver the services they're intended to deliver. So to the staff members that are working on it, thank you very much for your hard work.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion's carried. When we go to item 42.
Item 42, authorize acquisition of approximately 43,965 square feet of land located near the intersection of Harry Hines Boulevard and Empire Central Drive from McFarlane LLC for commercial and aviation-related development by Dallas Love Field Airport.
Thank you. Entertain a motion, Mr. Klein.
Motion for approval.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion. One opposed, Mr. Kingston. Motion is carried.
We will now go back to agenda item 39. Item 39, authorize the assumption of leasehold landlord interest in three commercial business leases and a billboard lease in conjunction with the proposed acquisition of approximately 43,965 square feet of land improved with three commercial businesses and a billboard located near the intersection of Harry Hines Boulevard and Empire Central Drive from McFarlane LLC for commercial and aviation-related development by Dallas Love Field Airport.
Entertain a motion, Mr. Kleinman.
Motion for approval.
A motion is second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And one opposed, Mr. Kingston. Motion is carried.
Agenda,
we'll go to item 41.
Agenda item 41. Authorize, one, a three-year service contract with 2 1-year renewal options to provide school crossing guard services, All City Management Services, Inc., most advantageous proposer of three, in an amount not to exceed $15,513,600, and two, an increase in appropriations in an amount not to exceed $200,000 in the Office of Management Services, Office of Strategic Partnerships and Government Affairs budget from $29,020,965 to $29,220,965. We do have one individual who signed up to speak on the item, Aaron Graves. Mr. Graves, you'll be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record, and you can begin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Aaron Graves. I reside at 601 Ovilla Oaks Drive, Ovilla, Texas. I am the managing director of higher education for American Guard Services Incorporated. Having served in this capacity for 7 years, I have witnessed the success of American Guard Services in meeting and often exceeding the expectations of his clients. I stand before you today not only as a member of this proven company, but also as a taxpayer in the city of Dallas. On behalf of American Guard Service, I'm requesting your further consideration of agenda item number 41. As a taxpayer, I have lived and worked in the city of Dallas over the past 25 years. I currently live in Northern Ellis County, as I mentioned earlier. However, my wife and I also own a residence in Dallas. As a career law enforcement and security professional, my company and I are perplexed as to the value of this award to the taxpayers of the city of Dallas. If agenda item number 41 is consented to today, over the next 3 years, it will burden the city with an additional cost of nearly $1.5 million. Additionally, any subsequent renewals will further add millions of dollars to this very critical service to our taxpayers. We fully understand the city's desire to procure a highly professional service provider that is well qualified and eager to provide crossing guard services. We are also of the opinion the proposal submitted by American Guard Services clearly provides a framework to accomplish this task in a fiscal and responsible way. We ask that you further consider the weighed factors outlined in the request for a competitive concealed proposal, specifically in the areas of program cost, capability, and expertise. American Guard Services has successfully expanded into the crossing guard arena across the nation, providing cost-effective solutions and added value in all aspects of safety and security in the public and private sectors. American Guard Services is not here today to cry over spilled milk. However, it is incumbent upon us to bring this matter to the attention of the citizens of Dallas. Our company is a qualified choice that has a nationally proven record. In closing, we're here today because we know the importance of this crossing guard project to the city of Dallas. It is in everyone's best interest to not stall and be buried in protest. However, we are asking the council to remove this item from the agenda today in the best interest of the city and the taxpayers. On behalf of American Guard Services, we appreciate the council's time and consideration. Thank you.
No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I will entertain a motion, Ms. McGue.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion second. Discussion, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Would Kim please come down, Talbert? I just have.
She's not here.
Kim is not here today, but we have other staff. We have Sarita Johnson, who's assistant director, right, who can answer questions about, and Elizabeth Reich and the whole team. So.
Gotcha. I see them coming now. Thank you all very much for the great briefing the other day. Reading here from the description of the motion, it indicates that the most advantageous proposer of the three was selected. Tell me a little bit about that vetting process and why you believe that this is the most advantageous proposer.
Okay, procurement.
Michael?
Sure. I'm Mike Frost, Director of Office of Procurement Services. The request for proposal process included evaluation of the submittals from all proposers, and including oral presentations from the vendors. Following the oral presentations, we did analysis on the costs associated with the proposals, as well as the reference checks on all the firms.
Tell me about the team that made the selection. Is it a three-man team, five-person team?
No, the team, actually, we had six members on the team that were diverse members of the city of Dallas that are executives inside the city as well. And my office reviewed the financials, and the Office of Business Diversity reviewed the inclusion portions.
And I got the impression during the briefing that they were very satisfied with this selection process, and I think everything moved forward. There was three, and then they chose this one. And, yeah, the cost is going to go up a little bit higher, but obviously we have that county option that we're going to focus on about building, getting that extra $1.50, so it should make us whole. I really appreciate how you guys very strategically and methodically went about checking all the existing sites. About whether there was a great need for that or not. Some, there's argument whether or not we might want to continue. But also, I'm real pleased also that probably 85%+ of the crossing guards are going to be able to retain their position, and we'll obviously begin to recruit others, and we may have some volunteers in some spots. So, but I'm comfortable with the direction. I think you guys really looked at this and peeled the onion back to get this thing right. Obviously, there may need to be some tweaks as we go forward, but I'm satisfied, and thank you all very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins.
Yes, a staff stater. I am supporting this motion. I have no problem with the motion, but I do have some deep concern. I know it's $15 million coming out of contingency fund reserve, but every kid in the city of Dallas need to be safe. My concern is, number one, that some of the schools in District 8 might not have crossing guard, and that need to be addressed. There's a map that I saw the map that said there may be two schools in District 8 might not have crossing guard, and they might not warrant for crossing guard. That's a major concern. One of the schools right across from the apartment, right directly from the highway, and so going forward, we need to make sure it's $15 million. It could be $15 million plus more money to make sure that we do have crossing guard in District to serve all our schools. But with this motion that I hope staff, and I'm asking staff that if there are, because of money, that we cannot have volunteers to make sure those kids are safe with crossing guard, I think on urge the city council to make sure that we do provide extra money. Because it's coming out of reserve, we do have the money. It's not like we don't have the money, but I do not want to be on my record that one kid gets safe, is not safe, or something happens to that kid because of lack of crossing guard, because of one. Every kid in the city of Dallas deserves to be safe. some neighborhood cannot have volunteers to make sure they can cross the guard and may not have the experience to make sure the kids are safe. But we do need people with expertise to make sure that the kids are crossed. Also, background check to make sure they are safe also. So those are my concerns, and I hope you hear my concern, especially in District 8. I don't know about other districts, but I think every kid in every district need to be safe crossing the street. Could you address that, please?
Yes, sir. I'm Sherita Johnson, Assistant Director in the City Manager's Office. This particular contract requires the contractor to enter into a volunteer program where they will be working with the schools and also with the community in those areas. In addition to that, we are also working with some of the ISDs to enter into an interlocal agreement as it relates to those areas that does not warrant a crossing guard. However, we are going to work with those school districts, and some of them have already told us that they will be more than happy to pay for those guards or reimburse the city. So in total, all of the intersections, even if they're not warranted, we are looking to staff those either by volunteers, which will be trained, and or reimbursement to the city.
Okay, could you make sure that the full council will get the list that every crossing guard is not warranted, and to make sure that when school starts August 1st, is not warranted, and make sure they do have crossing guard. If they do not have crossing guard, don't have volunteers, can we make sure that we at the city to make sure those kids are safe?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Ms. Clayton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple quick questions. So on this contract that is in order now, so fast forward a year from now or 2 years from now, if five schools need to have crossing guards and the metric makes sense for that, does this contract, is this capped to where we don't have wiggle room to add more guards, or is there money built into this to add guards?
Well, it's money built into this contract to cover up to 400 intersections. And right now, basically, we're looking at, I want to say, 286 intersections, just looking at the transportation department. But it's built up to, cover about 400.
And we only spend up to what we use, not?
Yes, sir, not to exceed $15.5 million.
The other question I had is, I would ask this on Monday, but when did the letter come in from the person who spoke? Did it come in yesterday?
Yes, sir. It came in at 5 o'clock last night. Yes, sir.
So in reading that, just to make sure I'm doing my due diligence, he said that it was about $1.3 million over the vendor that we chose, which is roughly, 10%? Is there, from our procurement standpoint, is there a ceiling where if it goes over X percent, we can't just qualitatively look at it? Because we always go
lowest bid and a low bid
right. I guess what I'm asking is, what's the relevance of the 450? Because that's obviously a big number. What factor that made that bid being $450,000 lower not be the most advantageous?
Right, and anytime we have a variance of any sort, we want to actually look at that and do analysis. And part of that discussion with the vendor was to ensure that they had all the equipment necessary, the management, because you're paying an hourly rate that's fully burdened, so they have to have management, they have to have backfill. So we looked at all of that, and in looking at the overall experience of the firm, this firm that we're recommending, this is their only responsibility. They have 250 cities and counties across the country. So this is their primary business, that they're very experienced. I think their model actually probably fits really well with what our expectations are, not to have any sites without posts without staffing. So.
And the other firm, that's not their only thing they do?
No, they have security services and they have...
Got it.
Yes, sir.
Okay, sorry, just because I got the letter last night.
Sure.
So thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to mention that I did speak with Commissioner Cantrell yesterday, and he assured me that it would be on the November ballot for us to, if the voters approved it, for an assessment fee. I think it's on the car registration that would bring in for us, $1.5-2 million? Do we know what, do we have an estimate of that?
Yes, sir, $1.5 million.
$1.5 million. So it would at least help with this program. So at least we'll get that help. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Felder.
Yes, so
First of all, I want to say that I think that the staff did an excellent job on this. I was very comfortable with the briefing that I received. I have the utmost confidence in Ms. Raish, Kimberly Tolbert, Mike Frosch. I think they've done a very good job in vetting this entire process. I know that sometimes when a bidder doesn't win the bid, I can understand that. But at the same time, you know, if you felt so strongly about not winning the bid, you certainly could have reached out to each council person and tried to meet with us. I certainly didn't hear from this other bidder. So anyway, the bottom line is I support what staff has recommended. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to join in my colleagues' praise of the way that you've handled this issue, except with regard to one thing. So, Omar, is it praise, concern, praise? Is that how you do it? I'm trying to learn new skills. You did a wonderful job. You're all good-looking professionals. You have a map of crossing guards that are not warranted by the data that we are studying with regard to child safety. That is because crossing guards have been allocated by whoever yells the loudest and is best connected at DISD or in this building, and that's not a good way to allocate resources. So you need to trust citizens not to freak out. You need to publish the map and publish it with an explanation that where crossing guards are not warranted, we're going to backfill with volunteers. There are not going to be crossings that parents are worried about that are not staffed. And people, if given the information, are competent to know whether to panic or not. Telling somebody don't panic causes them to panic. So that's the one thing I would say. Just trust the citizens a little bit more. Okay, last praise. You've been very responsive on this issue. Thank you very much for all that. I would also add, this morning on my way to work, I noticed that while we're studying school crossing guard locations and safe routes to school for children, we need to seriously reevaluate the city's system of school zones. On my way to work, I drove through multiple what I believe are obsolete school zones where you'd never see children. And I also see children crossing. I was in Northwest Dallas last week and saw many children walking to the beautiful new Medrano campus. And there are areas up there where I didn't see school zones. And I thought that was interesting. So just as we're gathering data, y'all being very data-driven, let's continue that when we look at transportation. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. And I think Kim came by and briefed some of this on Monday to me. I have and part of this just so is about the allocation of the reallocation of the crossing guards. About that data, I need more information how that data was collected. Since I during the meeting, I took a picture of the map, everything I posted on Facebook, and then I've got a lot of anecdotal reports from parents that they believe the numbers are off that are posted, particularly some of the numbers at some of the big schools in North Oak Cliff at the intersections. So then I asked the parents to follow up with emails and then with photographs, and so they've provided that to me, so I'll be giving that to your office. So I do have questions about how the data was collected, in what manner, and how many times. Was it just once? Was it multiple times? What were the conditions that day? Because just now from not only the anecdotal reports from the parents, but now some photographic evidence, I have concerns about the accuracy of the data.
Yes, sir. I have the transportation department here who conducted that assessment, and he can share with you some of the information.
Aro Majumdar, Assistant Director of Transportation. So the way we conducted the study was we took all existing crossing guard locations, and then we classified them into two different kinds of crossings. One is if they were crossing four lanes or more. Those, if it's a four-lane or a six-lane crossing, those automatically qualify. Then there were two-lane crossings. On those, if you had 20 or more students crossing in an hour, those qualified. So we would, so those were automatically qualified based on count data that we had from DCS. There were about 53 locations that did not meet that criteria. So we went out and we put out video cameras for 2 days at each location. So we took AM and PM counts, we looked at the camera counts, and then we determined whether there was enough room for them to cross. So we did what's called a gap analysis. So we took traffic counts, traffic speed data, determined if there was enough gaps for the kids to cross. Remember, I mean, these are all locations where we had less than 20 students crossing in an hour. So based on that, we came up with our list.
Right. So if there's some issues with the data, how do we go about getting an intersection reevaluated?
If the data was wrong, or, you know, I mean, we made sure it wasn't on a rainy day. It was when we had good weather. We can always go back and restudy a location.
Okay, so then I can just provide you, based on just the emails and the photographs that I received,
yes, sir,
for certain locations to go back and to restudy them. When will we?
We'll have to do it when school's in session. So if you send it to us, we'll do it after school starts.
And then when school starts, will it start with the crossing guard there?
If when school starts, I believe we will have volunteers, right? And
so
we'll
I can
do the study and have the volunteers before the study is completed.
Okay, because you'd want the study to be done under the same conditions with the crossing guards there. So if school restarts, if I'm asking for a location to be restudied that's on the list to not have a crossing guard in the future, on that date, will it have a crossing guard?
It will have a volunteer. According to, I'll let Sherry to answer that.
Okay, so it will definitely have a volunteer. All these spots will have crossing guard volunteers,
yes,
for sure, 100%
yes,
sure.
Right now, that's exactly what we're striving for. We're working with the school districts, and we also are working with the, well, now new contractor to make sure that we have guards at every location.
Okay, by every location, including the locations that are slated not to have crossing guards now?
Yes, those locations, we will either have a volunteer or we will have the school reimburse us. So you will still have a guard. That's what we're striving for.
Okay.
Those guards will not be paid by the city because we will either be reimbursed or we will have volunteers who are trained to, you know, the same as the school crossing guard, to be able to cover that particular intersection.
So those, then we will have the schools reimburse us. DISD.
Yes, that's what we're working towards. We already have two school districts that have stated that they would, you know, love to reimburse us. That was Mesquite ISD and Highland Park. And now we're, you know, working with the other school district, Richardson, also DISD. And so we will update council as we, you know, move forward during this summer.
Where are we with the DISD negotiations? Are they open to it?
We've had two conversations with some of the executives over there in DISD. We did say to them that we will come back. We also had a meeting, I want to say May the 10th, with representatives from the ISDs and the private schools, where the traffic department went over their traffic analysis and criteria, and we did say that we were going to get back with them as it relates to the findings. Yes,
great.
Sir.
Thank you very much for that,
yes, sir,
clarification. Thank you, Mayor.
Councilmember, I would just like to add that your information and additional data, we would really like to see that, and we'll continue to assess these intersections. I think the staff is well aware of the importance of making sure that those unwarranted intersections continue to receive the crossing and protections for those individuals, and then that'll allow us to assess that data in a condition that's kind of fully loaded, if you will. So, no.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and also thank you for holding this item. I definitely wanted to have an opportunity to say something. Today is awards day at my kids' school, so I had to be there for them.
Did you get any awards?
Yes. My son got A on a roll, so
okay, good.
Excited about that. First, I want to say thank you for all your hard work on this. I have no questions about the process. I had a chance to talk with Kim, and she was a very detailed answer to all the questions that I had. There is one location As you know, represent Southwest Dallas, so part of Duncanville ISD is in my district. So there's one location that I would like to talk with someone about, that particular location, making sure there's coverage at that location. We've had a potential traffic accidents in the past. I talked with the prior superintendent of Duncanville ISD about that, so I would like to – I hadn't had a chance to take a look at the list, but I'd like to have a conversation about that. But I want to commend you on your due diligence on this. I've heard nothing but good things about this particular contractor and their work. Look forward to also, if you could have them to send to my office contact information, I'd like to have a conversation with them. But I'm in full support of this. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. First, I do want to point out there was a comment made by a colleague that you could call us during a procurement process. That is not true. You please, nobody that has a going through a bidding process can contacting the council members. You have to do it the way that it was done, is through the city, and then they share that information with us. And then you can come down and talk to us at council. So I just don't want anybody putting us in those situations and calling us. Okay, I have a regarding this program. What, and this was managed before by Dallas County Schools, and what was it costing them annually?
Donzel, the assistant director in DPD, he was overseeing that particular contract at the time, so I would like for him to speak on that question.
Okay.
Or your question.
Thanks for the introduction. This gets approximately $4 million a year.
It is, so it was caught, that, and that was Dallas County Schools was paying that, and then we kind of inherited having to make that gap up. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
So so you have found savings in managing this program going forward?
Say that again.
So you found some savings managing this going forward? The way?
Yes ma'am. The savings came from the non-warranted assessments that were done.
Okay. And will these crossing guards then be employees of the City of Dallas, or they'll be employees of the contractor?
Employees of the contractor.
Okay, and that, and so we're managing it a little more effectively than it was previously managed before. So I think this is another example of, we tried to get rid of the school crossing guards when we had this long-term agreement with Dallas County Schools, and nobody asked the question, what's going to happen if they go under, and we're going to inherit it back, and we inherited a program that got ballooned to the point where it was, ineffectively managed. Now we're inheriting it back. Thank you for, it's challenging that we're having to address this, but thank you for figuring out how we could do it effectively and finding a vendor that can keep our kids safe, because that's number one. We have a responsibility as a city that around our schools we have safe environments and that we can get kids to school safely. I think the state is the one that told us it's our responsibility, right?
Yes, ma'am. That's correct.
I mean, as a city, I think we take that responsibility seriously, but the state has said that it is our responsibility. And we tried to outsource it, and that did not work, and now we're bringing it back in-house. So, but thank you for figuring out how we could do it and keep our kids safe and do it a little bit more economically. We're going to have to figure out how to pay for this going forward. But I think it's another example of why Dallas County Schools needed to be dissolved and get this moving in an effective manner. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to thank you for coming to the office, and also Kim to go over this with me. It's always concerning when you hear that there's not going to be a crossing guard at several locations, but I will be monitoring that, and it's also I'm just reassured that you could add more if you really needed it. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you. I heard Ms. Gates mention about state mandate. Can you explain that to me a little bit?
Basically, in the Texas Local Government Code, the state requires all municipalities that have a population over 850,000 to have a school crossing guard program.
Okay. And how many municipalities in the state of Texas are over 850,000?
I want to say, don't get me wrong, I think it's about three. Houston, San Antonio, us. And probably
Austin, Fort
Austin,
Worth.
Yes.
Fort Worth, maybe
yeah,
five,
about four,
five.
Three, four. Yes, sir.
So other municipalities are not required by the state to provide crossing guard programs.
I beg pardon?
Municipalities less than $850,000 are not required by the state.
Correct. I'm not a lawyer, but no, yes,
I mean,
correct.
Our understanding of the statute.
Correct, sir.
Do we have any idea when the statute went into effect? If it's not, if you don't know, that's fine. I think my point is, you know, here we are. We obviously need to provide crossing guards, and you guys did great work on this. But it's yet another unfunded mandate from our state legislature pushing costs to us. Not only will they not properly fund education, now they won't even fund safety for students, and they're pushing it to us, and it's just not appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
We'll now move to addendum item one. Addendum item one, authorize a 4% increase to the annual base salary of City Auditor Craig Daniel Kenton, CPA, in the amount of $8,811 plus the associated pension contribution and Medicare payments effective May 2nd, 2018.
The motion is second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Mr. Mayor, this concludes your morning agenda.
Before we leave, we have said Ms. McGew had an event last night, did the pledge. It's his birthday. It's the McGew Day. So let's wish him a happy birthday.
me. Who are we doing, Adam? Who is it? Whose birthday? To you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Adam. Happy birthday to you. 39 and holding.
We have an executive session. If you can immediately go to the lunchroom right here. We'll hopefully get this done relatively short. So it is now 10:15 a.m. on May 23rd. The City Council will go into closed session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the city attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda. David S. Martin et al. V. City of Dallas and George G. Parker et al. V. City of Dallas. Thank you. Completed its closed session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act, and at 1:02 p.m. on May 23rd, 2018, we've returned to open session. Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Clayton would like to be recognized on Agenda Item 44.
Mr. Clayton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to defer this item to June 27th, 2018 City Council meeting.
We have motion and second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Felder would like to be recognized on Agenda Item 48.
Mr. Felder.
I move to defer this item to June 27, 2018.
We got a motion is second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Mr. Mayor, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano would like to be recognized on Agenda Item 49.
Mr. Medrano.
All right, thank you, Mayor. I'd like to defer this item to June 27th of 18.
Which one?
49. Motion and second. Discussion, Mr. Callahan?
Yeah, if you don't mind, Mayor, on 48, I had a question, if you could come back to that item.
Okay, let's do 49. And
yeah, just go back to it.
All right. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried. If your light was up, I'm sorry. Mr. Go ahead and ask this question.
Yeah, I just wondered why the rezone 48, why that was being deferred. Is there some specific reason? It's just a religious place. It's been there 128 years, I think.
Mr. Felder, the question was asked of you why you made the motion to defer this item.
We're not finished meeting with the community with regard to this.
Okay. Thank you.
I just wonder, since it's been there 128 years, just going to add on to the building. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move to your zoning consent docket. Your zoning consent docket consisted of agenda items 43 through 45. Agenda item 44 was previously deferred. Therefore, your consent docket consists of agenda items 43 and 45. I'll read those items into the record. Item 43 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an MU-1 mixed-use district, a resolution accepting deed restrictions volunteered by the applicant, and a resolution terminating existing deed restrictions on property on the east line of Northwest Westmoreland Road, north of West Davis Street. Item 45 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an MU-1 mixed-use district on property south of Burgess Boulevard, east of Iberia Avenue. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation on any of the zoning consent items that were just read into the record? Are there any speakers in favor? No speakers, Mr. Mayor?
Thank you. We got a motion. Do we have a second? We got a motion and a second. Any discussion on the consent items?
Two items, 43 and 45.
Okay, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 46, the public hearing and an ordinance granting a plan development subdistrict for MF-2 multiple family uses on property on the southeast corner of Cole Avenue and Armstrong Avenue.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 267 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 194 replies in favor and 4 in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? We have a speaker coming forward. We have 2 speakers coming forward. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record, and you may begin. You may begin.
My name is Nick Wilhelmson, and I'm at 8111 Preston Road. Mr. Mayor, City Council, women and men, good afternoon. I'm with Alliance Residential, the applicant and developer. I want to quickly tell you about our requested rezone to construct 335 multifamily units at the southeast corner of Cole and Armstrong in the Knox area. Getting to this day has truly been a community process that we're very proud of. The city has received 194 ballots of support heading into this meeting, and that represents 98% of those that responded. This comes on the heels of receiving Oaklawn Committee support in February, as well as unanimous approval by City Planning Commission last month. We viewed this site as transitional in nature from day one. The property has commercial adjacency on 2 sides and is across the street from a 240-foot office tower. In this bird's eye view, looking south along Cole, you can see our building across from the 240-foot office tower, which is where you'll see the tallest face of our building. As the building nears residential adjacency, it transitions down towards the 3-story MF2. In fact, as a result of increasing building setbacks during the design process, we exceed urban form setbacks in most instances, and that's been in an effort to respect not only the wishes of the neighbors, but the 3-story character of the neighborhood. With wide sidewalks, walk-up units, and a design that really engages the walkable nature of the neighborhood, we feel the proposed design is an appropriate transition from the 18-story commercial use to the lower-density 3 stories of MF2 that abut us on the south and that continues south from there. This slide is a brief summary of our request, followed by community benefits of the project. A few highlights of the collaborative community process I mentioned are our commitment to contribute $175,000 towards a traffic signal, preservation of the existing large live oaks along Cole, 100% subterranean parking, open public spaces along Cole that do not exist today, and a voluntary affordable program for 10% of the project's units. The Oaklawn Committee originally challenged us to provide affordable units. In a subsequent meeting with Councilman Kingston, he further challenged us, asking if we would be willing to accept vouchers. After doing our due diligence, meeting with Troy Broussard at the Dallas Housing Authority, and working with our partners, I stand here today proud to say that despite putting this property under contract for a fully market rate project, we've agreed to accept vouchers on 10% of the units for a period of 15 years. I'll now step aside and let you hear from some of our neighborhood supporters.
Next speaker in favor.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Council, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Patty Pettit, and I'm speaking in support of the Alliance Project. I own a duplex on Buena Vista between Oliver and Lee Streets, about 3-4 blocks from the project site. I lived there about 10 years, and I've seen quite a few changes in the community. I first met Lindsay and Nick at a neighborhood community meeting. When she spoke to the group about the Alliance Project, I liked what I heard. Specifically, the courtyard will be open to public. No big fence around the property. They're planning a beautiful water feature. They hired an arborist. They're saving trees. The property will be beautifully landscaped. They're burying the power lines. Thank you. They're doubling the size of the sidewalks. That's important because many of the sidewalks around that area, they're old, dilapidated. They're hard to navigate, especially in high heels. So this is important to me. Another thing that impressed me was they spoke to the surrounding neighbors, asking for their input on the project, face-to-face and door-to-door. Who does that? No one goes to that trouble anymore, and that impressed me. They did. Bottom line is that they're taking a dilapidated area, and they're making it beautiful. Beautification means increase in property values. That's beneficial to everyone. Here we have an opportunity to do it right, to make a positive change for the entire area there. Change is something most people fear. They're afraid. I'll give you an example of fear of change and a beneficial development. Before Trader Joe's and Armstrong Knox apartments were built, I had quite a few friends and neighbors who strongly opposed the project. They said it's going to add way too much traffic. It's going to ruin the character of the neighborhood. They're going to be too many people around, on and on, you know, the usual complaints. Now those very same people who oppose that project shop at Trader Joe's every week, if not more. They enjoy walking to eat at Little Katana's. They enjoy shopping at Sur La Table and the other little shops in that section. Now they tell me they can't even imagine life without it. It gives us more choices and greater walkability. Hands down, added a new character to the neighborhood. Again, we have an opportunity to make our area more beautiful with a first-class project and first-class coordinators. I'm super excited for this to get underway and completed so we can all enjoy it. Who knows, maybe you or a family member or a friend will be living there someday and enjoy the amenities of the Knox area. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Next speaker in favor.
Good afternoon. I'm Sue Kreider on behalf of the Oaklawn Committee. We appreciate the developer meeting with us for more than a year, listening and responding to the committee as well as the neighbors, and we support this project and hope that you will too. Thank you.
Next speaker in favor.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. My name is Neil Morris, 2517 Thomas. My name is Neil Morris, and I'm here on behalf of the owners of 4423 Cole, 4416 Travis, 4333 McKinney, 4303 Cole, and 4701 McKinney. Our five properties are in the middle, are in the immediate vicinity of Alliance's proposed development, the Broadstone. 4423 Cole is literally across the street. We are long-term holders of our properties and have a substantial interest in the long-term success of the area. After reviewing the plans and elevations for the Broadstone, we are very pleased with the development on two primary levels. The first level is Alliance and their consultants have designed a building that is respectful of its neighbors, and they have done so in the following ways. One, they have buried all of their parking. No one wants to see a huge parking garage at the street level, but underground parking is very expensive, and it's in the best interest of the neighborhood. So we appreciate their willingness to put neighborhood interests before their economic interest. Secondly, they have designed a building that is substantial but approachable. With the generous setbacks and tiered approach to the design, the building will not feel as though it is imposing itself on the neighboring properties. Dallas's population, particularly Uptown and Knox Henderson, is growing rapidly. We want to welcome that growth without losing the character of the neighborhood. Alliance's plan does just that. It plans for the future while respecting the present. The second level is the quality of the development itself. This is a good-looking building, and that is really important. But as important is what the building will look like in 20 and 30 years. As I said before, we are long-term holders of our properties. We want a development that will look good now and that will look good in years to come. This development uses a substantial amount of brick and masonry, but like underground parking, brick and masonry are very expensive, but they last. So we strongly support this development and hope that the council chooses to support it as well. Thank you.
Next speaker in favor.
Tommy Mann, 500 Winstead Building, representing the applicant. I would just briefly note that we are in agreement with the unanimous recommendation of the Plan Commission. Would respectfully request that you follow it and are happy to answer any questions. Thanks.
Next speaker in favor. No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Kingston, I'll entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
A motion is second. Discussion, Mr. Kingston.
Yes, briefly, Mr. Mayor. Thank you all for coming to speak with us today. This is a very good presentation. You didn't take up the entire afternoon, but we got a sense of how broadly this project is supported. And I appreciate all of the work that that the developer has done, as well as the Oaklawn Committee on this. This is a project that started off as a pretty good idea, but by the time everyone had weighed in on it, it's substantially better than where it started. I wanted to address real quickly, this is a voluntary inclusionary zoning project. We are trading many of the things that you just heard from the developer about public benefits and as well as affordable housing for some entitlements. Not a huge amount of entitlements. We're going up a little bit. It's a transitional area in terms of form, not really in terms of economics. But I want to bring this up in light of the recently passed housing policy. Mayor Rawlings asked what I thought was a good question about what will happen if council does not follow through on the implementation matrix that management has provided us and, for instance, pass a voluntary inclusionary zoning policy. We need to create defined density bonuses in various areas of town, and those bonuses can be different for different areas. You all need to have input into how that works in your neighborhoods. That's not something that needs to be shoved down your throat. That needs to be something we all come up with. But here's the issue. These people have, when people are trying to develop property, they have to identify funding sources to build the capital stack. And if you don't know how much density you're going to be able to get, it becomes very difficult to put together the capital stack. It is very fair for the development community to require us to be transparent about what we will offer in terms of incentives related to zoning. The other beneficial thing that will happen when we do that is seller exuberance about the value of their property will be tamped down a bit. I believe that one thing that is holding back Dallas's current real estate development market is land speculation. People are sitting on land in anticipating that they can get greater entitlements than they can actually get, and developers are not able to put together projects simply because people are confused about how much their land is worth. Well, we need to be the ones to make that clear to them. And so I will be trying to work. I know that staff is on this. I will be very much trying to work on this so that we can bring you some kind of policy before the end of the year. I think everybody, if we're coming to the end of the cycle, then we need to stretch it as far as we can. And this could be a big benefit for our affordable housing policy, as well as for the development community. So the question is going to be going forward, are we getting enough for what we're giving up? And in this case, in the absence of a clear policy ahead of time, I did the best I could to make a deal with a developer who had already closed on the property. I think it's pretty good. I'm pretty excited about the number of affordable units we've generated in District 14 in the last 4 years. And I actually think we might be leading the way in terms of production of affordable units in the city. And I want to. I think our hottest real estate markets are the places where we ought to be focusing the most on ensuring that workforce housing is being developed. And that's what this is. The people who will move into this project, whether they're in the affordable units or the market rate units, are exactly the mix of people we want in PD 193 to make it sustainable going forward. So I very much appreciate all of your efforts. I'm very proud of the council in terms of the way it is approaching affordable housing, and I would respectfully request that you help me out with this motion so that we can this transition from this sort of intermediate step of affordable housing into something that might be more aggressive later in the year. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. Number one, I think it's a great project, and number one, we just passed a housing policy. Could the applicant come down, please? A couple questions. You know, number one, you know, we have looked at a comprehensive housing policy, but I do kind of like one thing. The 10% unit would be set aside affordable, and we're also talking about vouchers at the same time. Is that a combination of both? And what is the percentage that you think about? How many would be vouchers, how many would not be vouchers in those 35 units?
I think from our standpoint, we'll see what happens. We've offered to give a preference to a voucher holder if that's something that we can institute in the proper way. But we've assumed, as we've looked at this, that it would be all vouchers.
Okay. Would it have been one bedroom or two bedroom? They are one bedroom or two bedroom?
Our unit mix is 80% one bedrooms, 20% two bedrooms, and the way the ordinance has been agreed to is that we would allocate those same percentages to the affordable units.
You know, I think it's a great opportunity, great for the state of Dallas, you know, looking at the vouchers, you know, also the affordable unit, for you to come to here and volunteer to do that. I think it's a great thing. And I got to get all the council a hand of applause for the pass of housing policy, but also the developer come and said, hey, we do need workforce housing downtown. You know, we need to do a whole lot more. And I'm glad you come forward and say, hey, we can do that. 15 years. I would like for you to figure out what is the cost of those 35 units over a 15-year period, and what are you giving them, and what is your profit margin? Is that something you could volunteer and say, hey, keep a little side accounting bar to do something like that?
I think that's probably math we could do, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clayton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm glad you're up here. When I heard about the affordable units, I wanted to thank you for voluntarily stepping up, and I also wanted to give Councilmember Kingston a lot of credit that we didn't have a housing policy when you guys were in these discussions. And, you know, I think the biggest malignancy we have in this city is the inability to get affordable housing. So the fact that you volunteered for kind of the greater good and also to get the deal done, but I'm glad good sense made good business sense. And so I wanted to thank you, and also wanted to thank Councilmember Kingston, because I think you stepped up in a place that a lot of times, you know, we talk about but we don't do. So that's what I want to say. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I want to compliment Councilmember Kingston on the work he's done here. I think it's very fruitful, you know, for that area, and it certainly grows that fair housing component. But you can see that this is very much a community-oriented thing, the way they put this together with 40 stakeholder meetings and the Oaklawn Committee support, as well as, you know, the affordable housing component and the CPC support. So I think it's great, and your willingness to do that 10%, particularly vouchers, I think it's bold. You know, sometimes that program has been challenging, but I look forward to hopefully that you'll have a very successful project there. Burying the power lines is good. I think also tearing that away from the sidewalk has kind of taken away some of that shadow effect that you sometimes have. So obviously a reduction of the floor area ratio on levels 2 and 3. You know, that's what's happened. But that also, obviously, as we discussed, it affects your pro forma, too. You can't put as many units in there. But that's why it's important that you've done the affordable thing. Also, having the pool moved to the middle, I think that was a positive feature, you know, to kind of keep that away from the side roads, the noise level potentially that could come from that. But overall, I think it's great. Also, the one component, that 60% lot coverage rather than 80% lot coverage, I think that's great. And I know that affects your pro forma as well. But I think it's a much better look, you know, when you have 60% versus the 80% coverage. But I'm also happy that you went with the brick and stone, too, because the building really looks elegant as a result of that. And I think it's going to be a very popular project there. And I noticed you had 194 kind of replies for and about 4 against. So it shows that you really did your homework. And congratulations to you and to the councilman. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Felder.
Yes. Don't want to be redundant, but I want to give my colleague Mr. Kingston a lot of credit. I want to give my colleague, Councilman Kingston, a lot of credit for this. I think he's sincere in pushing for affordable housing. And also I want to give the developer, along with the consultant, a lot of credit because I think they are serious about doing good business and bringing affordable housing to the city of Dallas. One of the things I do want to point out is that we have a lot of available land in District 7, so if you're interested in coming, we will welcome you with open arms. So, but very seriously, this is an excellent project, and I have to give kudos to you. And last thing is those developers that are in the audience, the representatives of developers that are in the audience, and those who are watching and listening, this is the benchmark now. This is the benchmark. We're looking for you to come to the table just like this developer did. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kingston, let me ask you a question. Congratulations. This sounds great. I think we've got 35 units. I think I heard you say this is kind of the starter kit on how we want to get going. If we had a policy in place, how many would you have wanted in this? Is that
more
like twice 20, as much?
20% probably is a good place to start. And I think that the other project, Mr. Mayor, if you want to take a look at it, is Jack Matthews' multi-use project next to Dallas High School, where he's got, I think, 30 or 35%. Okay. Now, that's a low-income housing tax credit deal, which isn't involved here as a financing source. But I think as we try to set those density bonuses, we ought to be aggressive. I mean, if we want units, then we ought to be creating the market conditions that will produce units.
Thank you. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion's carried.
Agenda item 47, the public hearing regarding an application for the renewal of specific use permit number 1696 for a bar, lounge, or tavern on property on the south side of Elm Street, east of North Crowder Street.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 10 notices to property owners within 200 feet of the area of request. We received 3 replies in favor and none in opposition. Due to denial by the City Plan Commission, this will take a 3-quarter vote to approve.
CPC has recommended denial without prejudice. Therefore, if there are any speakers that would like to speak in opposition to the denial, please come forward. We have 2 individuals coming forward. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record. And you may begin.
My name is James Apostle. I'm an attorney here in Dallas. My address is 1910 Pacific Avenue, Suite 6005, Dallas, Texas 75201. I am the attorney for Mr. Manettis, who has sought renewal of an SUP. I'm here today to ask for a 30-day continuance of that matter. There have been raised allegations about several disturbances, and that may have swayed the prior decisions or the reversal. And what the grounds for a 30-day continuance are these, that there was a letter written 8 days ago by the lieutenant commander of the Dallas Department, or the DPD in Deep Ellum, who wrote that he has investigated Vinti Bar and has found no call sheets or complaints from his investigation, and that's in response to a negative letter by a lower-level officer who made a report, Officer Wright, that's in your file. This evidence is compelling because it shows that there have been no incidents reported to the DPD with regard to this bar. It's something that has not been considered. It's very new. I have made an open records request for that, and I have received a response that
you need to stay close to the mic.
I'm sorry. Yesterday, that letter from the lieutenant commander of that force, Mr. Officer Forge, will not be available for 30 days in response to the open records requests that I've made. These are all recent events within the last 8 days, and this evidence is compelling and necessary for all of you to make a decision. It's also counter to Officer Ochoa's statements at an earlier hearing. We would like full transparency to this council, and that letter is absolutely necessary and compelling. For that reason, we're asking for a continuance of 30 days.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next speaker in opposition to the denial.
Rocky Carlson, 102 Crescent View Drive, Ennis, Texas, 75119. I want to direct my facts directly to Mr. Medrano and Mayor Rawlings.
No, you talk to me.
Okay. Last month, we were initially approved for our SUP. However, due to the lone testimony of DPD Officer Ochoa, who is also on the payroll of the Deep Ellum Foundation, our only opponent, we were unanimously overturned and denied. Accentuating this fact, Officer Ochoa also coerced a negative written statement to the CPC by Sergeant Derek V. Wright, who has never been to our club, and was notified of what to write by Mr. Ochoa. This is not only unethical, but it borders on unlawful. A side note to this fact is that all three lead shift sergeants of this area were approached by us, and not one had ever even heard of our club. In that testimony, Officer Ochoa described our club as the worst in Deep Ellum and discussed more than 20 phone complaints to him personally in a one-year period. However, according to our records, 14 of those calls were made by our staff on three separate occasions to disperse issues happening at our entrance from not allowing people in the club. In all three of those incidences, not one officer ever arrived on the scene. I'm just wondering if that's normal practice. Since 2013, we've had only 8 police reports written at our address. Only 2 happened during our business hours of 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. One was the macing of a female by our staff, and the other was for the beating and robbery of one of our employees leaving the club and walking to the adjacent parking lot. Our only opponent, Mr. John Hetzel, owns a property which houses a restaurant a few blocks away who had a patron shot by a handgun. We have had no shootings, no gunplay, sexual assaults, beatings, etc. September 27, 2016, a period in which we were closed for remodeling, CBS News wrote an article speaking with numerous DPD officers describing the rising crime spike in Deep Ellum. The last paragraph of this story is quoted as saying, "Police said most of the crimes occur between 2800 and 2600 block of Elm Street between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m., which means that we inherited most of the crime that was occurring in that area. Club Vinti spends approximately $14,000 per month on both armed and unarmed security, and when asked for help with the cost of off-duty police officers, we gave the Deep Ellum Foundation double the amount that they had requested. We've complied with every single issue concerning the dress code and have taken an approximately 33% hit on the bottom line each month just to conform with what is good for Deep Ellum. So if we have had only 2 occurrences in 5 years, then where are the facts that you guys stand behind to close the doors? Which brings me to what may be the horrific fact we are dancing around. We have had a handful of meetings with the Deep Elm Foundation pertaining to our clientele, and continuously there seem to be no negative issues on paper to support their claims. So could this be the fact that 90% of our clientele is black and Hispanic? Maybe Deep Elm and the city is finding a backdoor way to eliminate blacks and Hispanics from coming to Deep Elm, because it's the only plausible explanation. I believe it may be far easier for the Deep Elm Foundation to resort to some old sundown town methods and make signs that say no blacks or Hispanics after dark in Deep Elm. We have made large investment in the club, so we will not go down without a fight. But I beg the council today for an alternative to closure. Consider a probationary period to allow us to show both you and the community that we are a good neighbor. We welcome the spotlight and are willing to conform in any way that ensures a safe and vibrant Deep Elm. Thank you for your consideration.
Next speaker in opposition.
Good afternoon, Council. Good afternoon, Council. My name is Mark Kirk. I am the manager of Venti Nightclub. We have had the business since 2011 and has successfully been granted three SUPs for a seven-year period. So this is our first time before Council. We are here today to ask for the fourth SUP renewal, and it seems that reasons of rumors to the Deep Elm Foundation is the only reason that they are opposing. Also, I was told by a board member of the Deep Elm Foundation that it is due to our clientele, which is mainly black and Hispanic. That's why I feel they are opposing. Our clientele is people that were already in Deep Elm that had been visiting Deep Elm and many other establishments there. So for one to oppose, for the one opposing, I have 40 signatures from the surrounding property owners, managers, general managers, and property owners themselves that support our SUP. We have made great strides to ensure safety of our patrons and people surrounding. So the facts are we have 13 police reports since 2011 of the date we opened, seven of which we were closed, and three of which was where I had made somebody that was trying to come in, I was denying access to. Another one was where our employee was beat and robbed, and I had called the police. And another one was where there was a fight in the parking lot that has nothing to do with Venti Nightclub. Okay? A paper that was written said we had major disturbances, public intoxications of the establishment. Not one police report was made for a major disturbance or public intoxication. Not one person has went to jail that has been to my establishment. Not one. I've had one code violation for a light fixture. I've had one TABC violation for an employee drinking 5 minutes after hours. I take fault for that. I've had one fire violation for using a sparkler on a bottle, which I was unaware that could not be used. I discontinued and paid the fine. That was only three other violations than the police reports that you will find on our club since 2011. And then, as Mr. Carlson explained, the Deep Elm Foundation, which Sergeant Ochoa had approached me when we had opened the club, reopened in 2017, he had asked us if we would join the Deep Elm Foundation to pay extra security and police to patrol, off-duty police officers to patrol. The asking cost was $400 a month. Mr. Menendez, which is the owner of the Venti Nightclub, said we could give him $800 a month. Since then, we've had people come to our door, ask for money to clean up trash and area off of Deep Elm, which we had gave. We have $336,000 invested in the Venti Club as of right now with me and Mr. Menendez. I've had a lot of time, my personal time, and we have a lot of employees that do not. I employ over 20 people, and I do not want them losing their jobs and their way of life. So I'm asking y'all to please consider giving us an SUP, and if need be, we'll abide by any restriction you give us. I appreciate y'all's time. Thank you.
Next speaker in opposition.
Hello and good afternoon. My name is Alexis Kirk. I'm an employee at Venti. I work for my dad, Mark Kirk, and I have been there since we reopened on June 28, 2017. I enjoy working there, and I feel the reason that we have been denied an SUP is unfair. The allegations we have against us are false. I believe we are definitely a safe and fun environment, and we cause no harm to the community. The employees are well experienced and are able to handle any issue we encounter. Deep Elm is a new place to me, and I feel that Deep Elm already had crime before we have reopened. And we contributed to helping the community by employing six security guards and we pay the Deep Ellum Police for their service. We have a lot of repeat customers who enjoy the club, and my dad is very knowledgeable and experienced in the bar industry. So overall, what I would like to say is that I love my job, and I don't want to lose it because of false accusations. Thank you for your time.
Next speaker in opposition.
Good afternoon, Council. My name is Edward Pena. I'm full-time employed by North Air Christian Church, and I am employed by Venti Nightclub part-time. I'd like to reiterate some of the stuff that
you could just put the mic a little closer to your mouth.
Okay. Apologize.
Thank you.
I'd like to kind of reiterate some of the things that have been said. There are roughly 11 parking lots in that area, and there's approximately 804 parking spots. And one of the parking spots and parking lots is right next to the Club Venti. And I work security there, and I've seen for myself when there's fights that happen all the time in the parking lots, and they spew out in front of the club. Excuse me, I'm a little upset because I keep hearing that it's a club, it's a club, it's a club, but when you have fights that happen in the parking lot next to you, you have fights happen in the parking lot in front of you, right next door to Cafe Brazil, and I've even seen fights happen right in front. An Uber driver and his client get in a fight right in front of the club, police come out, and they're looking at us like it's our fault. That's not our fault. I don't know what happened, but, and also, like what Rocky had said, during the time, the duration when the club was closed, there was a rise in crime in the Deep Ellum area. In that block, in that section where Venti is, but they were closed, and there was a crime increase. So I don't understand how any of this can be pointed to Venti. And that's pretty much all I got to say. Thank you.
Next speaker in opposition.
Hello, council members. My name is Yanni Maneras. I'm the owner and the applicant of Venti Nightclub. I'm here today to see if we can get our renewal reinstated. I'm here to talk about the nightclub, Venti. We have invested quite a bit of money, and we have been open only for almost 10.5 months, and we have invested almost $336,000 into this location, various reasons, we cannot get our SUP to continue on and to do business as we did before. We have got almost 42 business owners around the area of Deep Ellum supporting us. We're not a bad club. If it was, all these owners, business owners, would not support us. But evidently, everybody signed to support us. And I don't see why everybody has put us on the opposition, like they don't want us there. And we are we're doing this almost 30 years. We own same type of business, nightclubs, and we are professional on this special particular nightclub and restaurants. And same time, we've been. We've been refused to get our SUP by the commissioners, and now we're here on the council to see if we can reinstate our SUP. Thank you very much.
Next speaker in opposition. Are there any individuals in the audience? We have one more speaker coming forward in opposition.
Hello, my name is Ivan Nasua. I am a DJ for Venti Nightclub, also a customer. And as far as the nights, all the nights I've been there, working there, I feel like we haven't, made a big problem or anything like that. Of course, the DJ always controls the crowd. I play variety of music, not just one genre. And I just feel like I don't think it's a big issue on that. Thank you.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in favor of the CPC recommendation of denial? We have two individuals coming forward.
Is that all in speaking in favor? Just these two? Three? All right. Anybody come on down?
Please state your name and address, and you may begin.
Hi, my name is Jessica Burnham. I'm the executive director of the Deep Ellum Foundation, 2919 Commerce Street in Deep Ellum. I just wanted to, we had sent two emails recently to show what all the work that the foundation has done to gather documentation and information about Club Venti, and to ask that you do support CPC's recommendation. I wanted to explain quickly what we've done on our end for our SUP process since the beginning of this year, that anytime an establishment requests an SUP, we get a notification of it. And then we directly ask our officers through the ENP and our neighborhood patrol officers if there's anything we should know about that establishment beforehand or anything that we need to be made aware of. And if there's nothing that we need to be made aware of, we present that to our board each month, and then our board votes to write a letter in support or to ask for denial of an SUP. This will be the first SUP that the Deep Ellum Foundation Board has asked for denial of in 10 years. And it shows that we have been diligent. We have been working on this to create a strong system. And in the email that we had sent last night, there is a 46-page document attached that has direct reports from all of our ENP reports that we get every weekend, as well as stories that have been published about crime that happened. And so we really appreciate the work that DPD has done with us, that Assistant City Manager John Fortune has helped us with, and that just being able to use the tools that the city's provided to help and really work for the benefit of Deep Ellum. So we ask that you please support CPC's recommendation on this.
Next speaker in favor.
Hello, my name is John Hetzel, 2622 Commerce Street. I work for a Deep Ellum property owner named Madison Partners. I'm also the volunteer president of the Deep Ellum Foundation Board. I wanted to first draw everybody's attention to the people that were sitting near me up there. That is more than half of our board. I want to make it that all felt it was important enough to come down here. I want to make it clear it's just not one person or two people. It is our full board that voted unanimously to oppose this SUP. Our board is made up of all the large property owners in the neighborhood, as well as a number of medium and small property owners, business owners, including the owner of Bomb Factory, Trees, Canton Hall, as well as one or two residents and the president of the community association. So when our board makes a motion and provides a letter, it is a broad community letter, not just one or two people's opinion on an establishment. As Jessica mentioned, we have a formalized objective process now for our SUPs. We feel it's fair. There's also some community members here as well I wanted to point out. We feel it's fair, and it is objective. For those that have known me for a while, I do not oppose SUPs lightly. As a property owner, I know how dangerous that can be. It needs to be, if you're doing an opposition, it needs to be something that will truly harm the neighborhood, and we feel passionately that that's the case right now. As Jessica mentioned, this is the first time in 10 years we've gone for an opposition. There's an accusation about racial discrimination, and we have a number of African-American as well as Hispanic bars and nightclubs in Deep Ellum, but we have not come down here and spoken opposition to any of them. We love the fact that Deep Ellum is for all comers. It's this specific business and the volume of reports coming off of our off-duty officers and our conversations with the on-duty officers that have really driven us to come to this decision. And Deep Ellum's future is all about being proactive about public safety. The neighborhood has gone through massive boom and bust cycles in the past. And the reason it has is because the neighborhood never came together to solve the issue ahead of time. And this time we're trying to break that cycle and do something different. So we really ask that you all support us in trying to make sure Deep Ellum is for everybody and people can have fun, but it's also safe. Thank you.
Next speaker in favor.
Good afternoon. My name is Philip Honore. I am the public safety manager for the Deep Ellum Foundation. I just started in this new position that the foundation created to help foster a safe environment for visitors, businesses, and residents of Deep Ellum. For the last 3 weekends that I've worked, primarily from 7 p.m. to about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I observed one incident where, coming out of Club Venti, patrons were walking out with open containers of alcohol, which is not acceptable in Dallas, in the city of Dallas. One of my main objectives, and one of the main objectives of the Deep Allen Foundation, is to make sure our neighborhoods are safe, that the businesses can thrive, and that the type of businesses that are in Deep Ellum are not just inclusive for everyone, but provide and foster a safe environment for everyone who visits the city of Dallas. That's my statement. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker in favor.
Hello, I'm Rain DeVree. I'm president of the Deep Ellum Neighbors Association. I'm also one of the administrators of the Deep Ellum Community Watch, which has more than 4,000 members. I recently had a meeting with Chief Hall from the Dallas Police Department, along with some of the officers and representatives from Deep Ellum and Cedars. Deep Ellum Community Watch has been a force to be reckoned with, and it allows the police officers the actual tools to have to know what is going on immediately. It is actually working faster than 911, even though 911 is an important component so that we have the data to back everything up. For the past few months, there have been several problems with Venti that have been reported in and people having concerns with. One club in particular, Whitsin, had to shut their doors early one night because of gunfire that was emulating from in front of the Venti complex. I have witnessed girls that could not even physically walk to a car by themselves, literally been manhandled into a car, just tossed in. Their social media presence, if it is theirs, because it's under their name, is very disturbing, the way it looks at women, very condescending, just playthings, things to have fun with. We have a tattoo parlor across the street. They have had numerous complaints. Please stop the red lasers. Those guys are working very fine detail work. The mirrors are in the gallery, and those red lasers coming out of Vindy just bounce everywhere. And that could affect their livelihood. It could blind them. I've gone to code compliance. I've asked for help. Venti allegedly has told code that they would be nice and turn off the red lasers. That did not happen. We've got the videos and the photos to prove it, to back it all up if it needs to be presented. So I am just asking the council. I'm real pro-business. I love Deep Ellum with a passion. I am not against small business. I want that neighborhood to succeed. I want people to come down and have a great time, spend their money, keep coming back. But Venti is not a good fit for us, unfortunately. So I ask that you please don't approve the SUP. Thank you.
Next speaker in favor. Okay. No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Medrano. I'll entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mayor. I move to follow the CPC recommendation for denial without prejudice.
Motion and second. Discussion. Mr. Callahan. Yes, Mr. Medrano, did you want to say something? No, Mr. Callahan.
Just want to note, I did have a conversation with Mr. Mark Kirk, and also took a look at the dossier that he prepared and looked at all that. And something that seemed to jump out at me, I didn't see a lot of police-related action on that report that he had. So I was just wondering, you know, what is the truth here? Is there actually a police report or not? Sounds like most of the things that have happened on the police report have been external to the club, in the parking lots, on the sidewalk, and so forth. So is there somebody from the police department that could speak directly about that? Is there prima facie evidence? Is there something on paper that shows that there is actually reports in there? I know there was one report where somebody wanted to use the phone, and obviously the police is going to use that address, you know, when a police officer comes to the club, and that's where the person is. But apparently this action happened out in the parking lot, and they just ran to the club to get help.
So just a little bit about some of the evidence that has been articulated by some of the folks that have come up here and spoke about Venti Club. You will find that we've had since May of 2017 to about end of May, current time of 2018, we've had 9 calls for service. And of those nine, six of those have been disturbances. You will find
internally or externally? Internally in the club or externally?
Some internal, some external. One of which was involving Mr. Kirk, where he maced someone out on the front sidewalk, and he was charged for that. You'll find many other incidents involving Venti Club that are not documented within DPD's call system because of the Deep Ellum Foundation has hired extended neighborhood officers who work over the weekend. 6 to 10 officers work the weekend on every Sunday. They have the unfortunate opportunity to deal with Venti Club. So with this off-duty officers, they can call the cell phone number. Many of the businesses, many of the patrons that are down in that area can call a cell phone that is tied to the off-duty officers and make their complaints. So therefore, that will not go through our 911 system. So we have a multitude of incidents that occur out there.
Okay. Well, that's what I needed to hear because based on what I was reading and kind of absorbing, I was getting the impression that there was a limited amount of complaints, and most of those complaints were external to the bar. And we've got a lot of these groups, you know, that have come up that are, you know, obviously Oaklawn Committee is one and others. And I just want to make sure that the council is somewhat careful when these groups are somewhat de facto authorities that, you know, we know because we're the Oaklawn Committee or we're the Deep Ellum Foundation. Just want to make sure that we just look at that as one of many components. You know, I don't try to sell out to any given area. I try to look at a lot of things. What does the Chamber of Commerce say? I might even look at what the Rotary Club thinks or what does the DPD think. Try to roll it all together. So while I respect this group and others like them, I don't want to just simply rely on them because they may have an ulterior motive for whatever reason. Just because they determine that this club fits or this club doesn't fit, you know, they may have some particular reason, you know, commercially or monetarily for that. So I just want to respect that fact. But I really appreciate your saying that, and that's important that we really get the evidence out in front of us to make sure, because these gentlemen, you know, they do have a lot of money tied up. And you know, you get a kind of a white box in a club and say, here's the keys, and then you go drop a bunch of money in. Obviously, you got to get a return on your investment. But obviously, at the same time, they've got to obey the rules and laws and so forth. And I asked them to consider maybe closing at an earlier hour or a probation period, and they're, I think, willing to look at some of those things. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. When we consider specific use permits, it's important that we abide by the legal standard. And the legal standard is always the same. It's set forth in state law that the use has to complement or be compatible with surrounding uses and community facilities, contribute to, enhance, or promote the welfare of the area of request and adjacent properties, not be detrimental to the public health, safety, or general welfare, and conform in all other respects to all applicable zoning regulations and standards. And so we have reviewed more information than was presented here today at the podium or at the lectern, and including all of the material that Deep Ellum Foundation sent to us. I monitor Deep Ellum Community Watch, and it is a great source of information about what's happening in the neighborhood. Ms. DeVries, your testimony specifically about other businesses being forced to close early or having other operational problems goes directly to one of the legal standards. And I think that the backup documentation in the item demonstrates that this property operated without a certificate of occupancy for a period of years. It currently is operating on a bar, lounge, tavern certificate of occupancy, and it is in fact a dance club. That's not acceptable to me. In my opinion, all four of the legal standards have evidence to demonstrate that this is not a compatible use with the neighborhood, and I'll be supporting the motion. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Hearing no other, I will be happily voting with you, Mr. Medrano. Okay. I don't know where the truth is, but I saw that post you put up. That is disgusting, misogynistic, and we don't hit women in this town. All in favor say aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion's carried.
Agenda items 48 and 49 have been deferred. Therefore, we'll move to agenda item 50.
Enough. Enough.
We'll move to agenda item 50. Item 50 is an appeal of the City Plan Commission's decision to deny a waiver of the two-year waiting period to submit an application for an amendment to Plan Development District Number 691 with an MD-1 modified Delta overlay and a D liquor control overlay on a portion on the northwest corner of Greenville Avenue and Lewis Street. We do have one individual who has signed up to speak on the item, Carl Crawley.
Carl Crawley, 900 Jackson Street, representing Verizon Wireless in this request. This request is, you don't see too many of these, appeal of a two-year waiver request that was denied by the Plan Commission. There is a tower that's located at what used to be, I guess, called Belmont Towers at Belmont and Greenville, which got a two-year SUP, which must be removed by January 19th, I believe, of 2019. Verizon has searched the area and found a good location to put up antennas that they will have to remove from that. It is on the building that I always know it as the place next to where the Frogs used to be. I guess that sort of dates me. But it's at the corner of Lewis and Greenville. They will be mounted antennas. I've got a cute little picture here. I don't know if it'll come on. There'll be mounted antennas on the building that will be hidden as best you can hide antennas as chimneys on the top of that building. We need a two-year waiver because in December of last year, an amendment was made to that PD that would, I believe, it allows some use and retail use change. So we could not come back and apply until December of 2019, which means the only option for Verizon in this case, if this is not a location, would be put up a separate tower, and I don't think anyone likes towers in neighborhoods. But this would allow them to put those, you see the two there, I guess it came up now, the two chimney-looking things. We met prior to the Plan Commission with the Lower Greenville Neighborhood Association and the Lower Greenville West Neighborhood Association there at the site, and they looked at what we were going to do. And they were both in favor of the waiver and the requested, hopefully requested, amendment to that PD. That PD doesn't allow mounted cellular antennas. It was prior to those really being common and to be mounted on anything. So we're requesting that waiver, the two-year waiting period. The two-year waiting period is based on a physical change to the property. Usually when it was implemented was to sort of keep developers from wearing neighborhoods out by coming back and back and back. And I understand that. We actually went to the neighborhoods and they're okay. They'd rather see that than an antenna that we could build by right. There's a location a couple of streets over that we could build by right. I always answer at the Plan Commission, and the staff will heard my joke before, besides, and now it's somewhat relevant, besides the volcano, as in Hawaii, there's not a whole lot of physical things that can change a piece of property, and fortunately we have not experienced that in this area, or earthquakes, so or large earthquakes. We've had tremors. So I'm asking that you not go with the Plan Commission and approve this waiver of the two-year waiting period so we can apply and then continue the sales service that we have in that area. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, this item is not a public hearing. Therefore, this concludes your speaker on this item.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion, Mr. Kingston.
Move to hold the item until June 13th.
Second. A motion is second. Any discussion, Mr. Kingston?
Yeah, just briefly. I need some time to speak with Mr. Crowley about the appropriateness of the location. The procedural tool he's using is not really a problem because this really is something where there was a previous amendment that didn't have anything to do with this. So it's not an attempt, in my opinion, to skirt the rules at all. I just need to make sure we've got the right location. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. Carl?
Yes, ma'am.
Verizon put up a cell attachment to an Encore electrical tower along the Preston Ridge Trail, and they put up a whole bunch of equipment with a chain link fence at the bottom of it, and we have asked them to just put some bushes in front of it because it's a hike and bike trail, and they have completely blown us off, okay? AT&T put bushes around theirs, but Verizon, it's like, well, if we don't have to do it, we're not going to do it. So they're coming here asking us for sure something, and I'd like to ask them to be a good neighbor and take that request more seriously and put some bushes around that massive amount of equipment that they put in there. So maybe you might want to mention that to them.
If you'll let, I think your assistant always has my email address, so I'll know because they may have two or three at to what location.
Oh, we'll tell exactly which one. Thank you so much.
But if because I may be dealing with someone who doesn't, you haven't been
Thank
dealing.
You.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, but they can talk to each other.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion's carried.
Agenda item 51 is a public hearing concerning the early renewal and expansion of the Deep Ellum Public Improvement District, the district, in accordance with the Chapter 372 of the Texas Local Government Code, and at the close of the public hearing, authorize 1. Approval of a resolution renewing the Deep Ellum Public Improvement District for a period of 7 years and adopting the expanding district boundary. 2. Approval of a service plan for the district. And 3. Approval of an extension to the management contract with the Deep Ellum Foundation, a nonprofit corporation currently managing the district. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak on the item? We have an individual coming forward. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record, and you may begin.
John Hetzel with Deep Ellum Foundation. I won't waste any of your time. I just want to let you know that Jessica and 2622 Commerce, I just want to let you know Jessica and I are here to answer any questions you might have on this item. Thanks.
Any other speakers on the item? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins isn't here, so I'll, since it's your district, Mr. Medrano, look for a motion.
Move for approval.
Second.
Motion is second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion's carried. Mr. Medrano?
Yeah, thank you. I think, do we have one more item?
We have two more items.
Is it with the PID as well, or no, that was just, that was
another
it.
PID item.
Mm-hmm.
Is it? Okay, yeah. Okay, so I'll speak to this one. But I just want to say this and for the record, but actually, Jessica Burnham is leaving the foundation as the executive director, and I'm very sad. We did a lot of great stuff together. We clicked. I really do appreciate all the work and appreciate you and our relationship of these past few years. We've been able to do some great stuff in Deep Ellum. Whoever's coming has got some big shoes to fill. So I just wanted to let you know that I really do appreciate you. I'm going to miss you.
Thank you.
I know I want to cry.
I guess we got some other people who want to compliment her. Mr. Kingston?
Now you know how I felt when you swiped her from Lower Greenville.
Thank you, Mr. Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to echo what Mr. Medrano stated. When I was on the county school board, I would do a lot with the Deep Ellum Foundation and the folks up there. And just to see how Deep Ellum has changed and has become a place where everybody feels welcome and everybody's having a good time. And just seeing all the visitors in Dallas loving the area. And, you know, that's compliments to you as well as your entire board and everything y'all done over the years there. And especially to Mr. Medrano, because I know he's out there almost every day. It's hard to drag him into District 6 to eat lunch or dinner, but sometimes I get him over there. But if we're not there, we're usually in Deep Ellum. And so thank you for that, and congratulations, Adam. I know you're going to get somebody good, but you've done great with these folks. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take up item 52.
Item 52 is a public hearing concerning the renewal of the Prestonwood Public Improvement District, the district, in accordance with Chapter 372 of the Texas Local Government Code, and at the close of the public hearing to authorize 1. Approval of a resolution renewing the Prestonwood Public Improvement District for a period of 7 years, 2. Approval of a service plan for the district, and 3. Approval of an extension to the management contract with the Prestonwood Homeowners Association, a nonprofit corporation currently managing the district.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion. Mr. Atkins, you're back here drinking coffee. I'm going to need a motion from you.
Well, that's okay. It's my
How about Miss Grayson? I'll do it. It's in Ms. Grayson's district. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins. I move to close the public hearing and move approval of the resolution renewing the PID district and approval of the service plan and approval of an extension to the management contract.
Second.
Okay. Motion is second. Any discussion? Ms. Grayson.
I just wanted to say that this is renewal was done with over 80% agreement from among the homeowners, and that is spectacular, and they really appreciate having this security PID.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I am a big fan of the Prestonwood PID because and the other PIDs that have residential property included. I think that neighborhoods benefit greatly from being able to have PID funds controlled in a transparent way by a proper board, but that can then backfill services that we can't always get to from the city. And I would like to request, Mr. Pogue, as we look forward to the comprehensive economic development policy coming forward, that we re-examine really misguided restrictions that we have put on residential PIDs by increasing the requirement of petition percentages of the landowners beyond what is required under state law. I think we need to go back to the state law requirement and start encouraging neighborhoods to organize in this way. One of the hardest things to do is organize a neighborhood association. It generally only happens when the neighborhood is actually threatened, usually by some mistake in this building. And those are very difficult to run because they're always voluntary. It's hard to raise money. The most scarce resource in a city is volunteer hours. And if we didn't have them, the city would cease to function. We're not actually capable of operating a city without our volunteers. If they can have a reliable source of funding, then they can improve their neighborhoods without waiting on us. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 53 is a public hearing on a proposed municipal setting designation to prohibit the use of groundwater as potable water beneath properties owned by Second Hickory LTD, located near the intersection of Canton Street and Trunk Avenue and adjacent street rights-of-way, and an ordinance authorizing support of the issuance of a municipal setting designation to Second Hickory LTD by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality and prohibiting the use of groundwater beneath the designated property as potable water. Pursuant to Section 51A-6.108G3 of the Dallas Development Code, the applicant or licensed representative of the applicant who is familiar with the application must be present and available to answer questions. Would that individual please come to the podium and identify yourself?
Hi, my name is Clayton Snyder. Address is 1563 Mahogany Drive in Allen, Texas. I'm a licensed professional geoscientist in the state of Texas, and I'm representing Second Hickory.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak on the item? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Medrano.
Move for approval.
The motion is second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Ms. Mayor, this concludes our voting agenda. We do have one afternoon speaker, Sandra Crenshaw, not present. This concludes your agenda, Mr. Mayor.
Meeting's adjourned, 2:12 p.m. Thank you.